Welcome to the Donkey's Best Friend Podcast. I'm your host, Bobito, a.k.a. Bobito Mosquito, a.k.a. the Funk Soul Brother, a.k.a. Master B, a.k.a. Styles B, a.k.a. BMX. And you are listening to the 52nd episode of this podcast. Meaning, if you can gather a podcast a week since the inception of this podcast. So the 52nd episode means that we have officially been podcasting for 1 year. Woo! Yeah! Fucking hell, dude. We did it. At least 1 year down the hatchet. We did it. Thank God to every single one of you who has been listening to this podcast. Wherever you jumped on the journey, thank you. Wherever you jumped off the journey, thank you. You helped us get here. Honestly, I appreciate every single one of you that's clicked play. Even once, even for a minute, for however long. I appreciate you guys. But I obviously have to give a real shout out to every single person who has completed an episode. And then the greatest, like the biggest love that I can honestly give to anybody who actually listens like regularly. Thank you to all of the people that fit somewhere on that spectrum. I appreciate every single one of you, and you guys mean the world. So off we go into episode 52. And I was thinking to myself, like, just kind of as I'm trying to, like, well, just trying to figure out, like, small little things that I can work towards in the podcast, things that I can, you know, take stock of when things are achieved, when things happen. And one of the things that I remembered with the first episode was that the name was Genesis. Name was Genesis, and that was mainly because I was discussing the genesis of the podcast. So, for those of you who don't know, you should know. But let me not say you should know. It's not necessary reading for everybody. But Genesis is the first book in the Bible. And for those of you who listen regularly, you will know that I was raised extremely Christian. I no longer really... what's the word? Identify, if that's what you can say, as a Christian. I do definitely still hold some of the teachings. I'd say majority of the teachings dearly. I don't take everything literally in the Bible. I haven't read the Bible in entirety in like forever. But yeah, being raised Christian, like, you, there's things that don't, that don't, that you don't like let go of, like through Bible study as a kid, like going to church consistently, and there's just certain teachings that stick with you even without reading the Bible. But what tends to, well, at the very least for me, what tends to happen is sometimes because of my lack of consistency, let's call it, in terms of reading the Bible, which I wouldn't even call it consistency. Like, I'm not a Christian. It doesn't behoove me to read the Bible consistently, you know what I mean? But every now and then, having a conversation with either a Christian or hearing something in which people paint Christianity to be this evil power within the world, and use teachings within the Bible or verses within the Bible to illustrate that point. What tends to happen is, personally, I don't like being like told what something is about, how something is. I'd rather see for myself, read for myself. And it's been difficult for me to take some of the, like, every now and then when someone quotes a verse, that's much easier because I can just go to that verse in my Bible and check if what they're saying is true. And then obviously it's open to interpretation, to some people think that the Bible is as is, and there's no interpretation, there's no room for interpretation. Those are like, if you can call it, hardcore Christians. And when I say hardcore Christians, I don't mean that it's a bad thing. I mean, it's just the reality of the situation. So I was just thinking to myself, like I said, Genesis. And I've wanted to do this for a while. And what I mean by this is read the Bible in entirety. In what I can consider mature adulthood. And see what I take from it at this point in my life. But I never stick to it. So what I thought would be a great theme for the podcast, just in general, moving forward, is that every year cycle, I will do a book of the Bible and just give my thoughts on that book of the Bible. So this year, we're doing Exodus, which is the second book of the Bible. And Exodus is probably one of the more popular books of the Bible. Or let me rather say, familiar books of the Bible to everybody, both Christians and non-Christians, due to the story being told. And that story is of Moses and the exile, exile is when you force someone into, when you force somebody to leave, or force a people to leave. So that would be exile. You exile somebody. But can somebody exile themselves? And would that exile be an exodus? I think so. I think that's how these words work. But anyway, so it speaks to the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt. The story is like that, the Israelites found themselves in Egypt. They went to Egypt to escape famine. And this was like, let's call it before the event of the Exodus. This is like, so 400 years before that. Something like 400 years, somewhere around there. Guys, you know me, you know how it is. There ain't no like notes here. 400 years or so. The Israelites head to Egypt to escape famine. And at this time, they are accepted as, maybe not Egyptians, but like, you know, you're welcome here. They are welcomed and treated as neighbors and, you know, just, you know, do your thing, we do our thing, and we can coexist equally, you know, fairly. Maybe not equally, but, you know, all's good. And then, yes, hundreds of years later, the Pharaoh at the time is like, yo, I don't know why these guys are here. Speaking about the Israelites, I don't know why they're here, and there's too many of them, and they like, nah, I don't know, I ain't got no deal with these guys, I ain't got no relationship with these guys. Basically, like, I don't know if you heard, what's his name, not To Pimp a Butterfly, what's that album called, man? Good Kid, Mad City by Kendrick Lamar. Basically, that idea of, yo, where who you from, dog? Where you from, dog? Who's your mom's, like where you from, dog? What block you from? What set you from? Like, who's your mom's? I need to know your mom's. I need to know your uncle. I need to know somebody. Otherwise, it's gonna be a problem. And that's basically like the energy that the Pharaoh was giving the Israelites. And so he was like, oh, I don't know you. Y'all don't have no references. Y'all ain't got no papers. I did slavery. All of slavery. And like, because there's so many of you niggas, I need to make sure that you guys don't rebel. So I'm killing all the male babies. All of. So at this time, first off, let me just say, the reason why most people are familiar with the story is that there was a movie, Prince of Egypt, which, after reading Exodus again, is pretty accurate. I think the one thing that I wouldn't, that jumps out at me as maybe not so accurate. And what I mean by accurate is accurate to the story in the Bible. Don't mean accurate like, yo, like, fact check this, like, it really happened, like, you know what I mean? Just like everything in the Bible, it's very hard to prove these things. These events really took place. I'll leave that to the people who fact check this kind of stuff, and like, if they can historically prove that, it would be awesome. But anyway, there's an interesting thing that we'll get to that really, I don't know, it really, like, just personally, I think there's something calling out to me as somebody raised so Christian, and still, like, regardless of me identifying as a Christian, I still hold Christianity in high regard. I still hold most religions in high regard. I believe that religion plays a massive role in shaping the moral and ethical foundation that we have as human beings. I don't mean that it's completely necessary to do so, and that without it, you will find yourself as an immoral person. That's definitely not what I mean. It's kind of like how I look at school. Like, I believe in education, school, like tertiary education, that kind of thing. I believe that it's a way to unchain yourself and really, really achieve like some form of training as a way to achieve a goal. I believe that education plays a role, but I also do believe that you don't need it to achieve the same goals. There's different ways to skin a cat. You know what I mean? So I look at religion in the same way. I think that for those maybe, yeah, I don't know. I think I've explained it well enough. So cool. There's something, yeah, by the way, there's something that I'm going to come back to at that point, which is really awesome, and just, yeah, I hold in high regard. Regardless, so at this point, Moses' mom saves him. If you've seen the movie, you know. If you don't, I'll quickly run through it. Saves him from the Egyptians who are committing genocide and killing all the babies, and like sends him across a river in like a basket, and the Pharaoh's daughter finds him. The Pharaoh at the time's daughter finds him and raises her. Now, this is where the cartoon movie, and which is a really good movie. If you haven't watched it, I recommend watching it. It's a really good movie. And yeah, anyway, it's a really good movie. So anyway, should I have a spoiler alert? Yeah, maybe. Spoiler alert. Why not? For this story. Spoiler alert for Exodus in the Bible. For the story of Moses. If you're not familiar. So, cool. She raises him now. The disparity, or at least the one that I saw, was that she raised him or oversaw his upbringing. And in the movie, he's kind of raised as a prince of Egypt, which I don't know if that would be the case. Would that be the case? I mean, if you subscribe to the idea that the Israelites of this time were closer to black than they were closer to perhaps the current tonality or tone or race or whatever that you want to call it of people who you would consider Jewish today, then perhaps it could be seen to take place. But yet again, no, I don't think so, because royalty in Egypt, especially at this time, was so closely intertwined with being a deity. Like their pharaohs, what was Cleopatra known as? Not a pharaoh, but a queen? Yeah, pharaohs and queens, I guess, were considered the rebirth of deities. That, yeah. So, can you adopt someone into something of that ilk? I don't know. Don't know. Don't think so, if you're asking me. Don't think so. But anyway, cool. Moses grows up and he's aware or made aware of his Hebrew upbringing and lashes out at a god or a Egyptian who was attacking an Israelite and kills him and then escapes in exile or goes to exile. Now there's different versions of the story. Some say that he approached the Pharaoh, he approached the royal family of Egypt and was like, yo, or approached the power structure of Egypt and was like, yo, you gotta let the Israelites go, you gotta make this better for the Israelites, and he was exiled. And then there's the other version where he decides, no, this what you're doing is wrong, or he kills that guy and then he runs away. Regardless, comes to the same story. He goes there, he finds a wife amongst, I think, Hebrew people. Yes, like a tribe, a smaller tribe. Finds a wife, makes a home for himself, becomes like a sheep herder or shepherd. Sheep herder. And then God comes to him and he's like, yo, I need you to go and free the Hebrews, my people, the Israelites. And it's just a quick sidebar. If this had been a conversation with any one of my niggas, the way I read how God spoke to Moses, if I'm just like subbing in, me, one of my niggas, MZ, Keegan, Richie, whoever you want to throw in there, and God's like, yo, need you to go free the Israelites. You know, Pharaoh's doing some ill shit. And you gotta fix this. Immediately would have been like, hey man, don't tell me what to do, bro. Don't tell me. The energy would have been different. Just a sidebar joke. Anyway, so God gets angry because Moses is like, nah, I don't know, like just like shuffling his feet, like I don't know, it's not like I ain't the one, you know, like I can't do this. Anyway, cool, he eventually like goes to the Pharaoh and he's like, yo, let my people go. Goes with the staff, snake, it turns the staff into a snake to show him like, yo, God's talking, like this is not my words, this is God, God's telling you this shit. And he's like, nah, I don't care, I'm not doing it. In fact, I'm gonna make it worse for the Israelites. So at this point, God starts releasing the plagues, 10 plagues, and the order of the plagues. If I'm like, okay, so geez, what is the order? Let me Google this just to make sure I get this, because I don't know, there might be some significance within the order of the plagues. They definitely go from like lighter to like hardcore as they move forward, so that's probably the significance. But they might be like symbolic significance, and that's kind of like what the cool thing about the Bible is that there's like so much symbolism within the Bible, or maybe poetry within the Bible, that you can find hidden meanings and take and interpret it in a way that may be relevant to your own life. And that's maybe what I'm trying to do here, and failing to, but I'll figure something out, or maybe take something from this. The main thing is like the cruelty part and like that. Yeah, that's probably like it, but in any case, before we go any further, let me get the plague. So the plagues go from the first plague being he turns the Nile River into blood, and then he causes frogs to cover Egypt. That's the second one. Third one, turns all of the dust in Egypt to gnats. Fourth one, causes swarms of flies to come into the houses of Pharaoh and his officials. Five, he then strikes down Egypt's livestock with a disease. Six, it creates festering boils on animals and on humans and animals. Seven, sends thunder, hail, and fire from the sky that destroys the crops, livestock, and people. Eight, sends swarms of locusts and covers Egypt with the darkness that can be felt. And before each of these plagues, God is telling, like, or he sends Moses to be like, yo, release the Israelites. Let my people go. You know, the famous, let my people go. And he's like, nah. The Pharaoh's like, nah. But in the Bible, what I find interesting at this point especially was that God says he hardened Pharaoh's heart so he would say no, and then punishes him for saying no. Or rather, he hardens Pharaoh's heart and he's like to Moses, you see, I told you to say no. Didn't I tell you to say no? Release the next plague. Go to him and tell him to let my people go. But then he hardens his heart further than the time before. And then he's like, yeah, you see, I told you. So guys, like I said, if it seems like I'm being, I think it's only fair that I do this with everything that I talk about in this podcast. The fact of the matter is, there's a certain way that I describe things, there's a certain way that I look at things, and I would be disingenuous if I didn't look at everything in the same manner. And how I look at things is with a light heart. I know it may seem like I'm making, making fun of or belittling either God or the religion, but that is far from the truth. It's just the way I talk about things that I'm interested in, and you know how I look at things, you know, and I always colloquialize things, like just the way in which I look at things. So I'm not gonna ever speak in like the way that they speak. I'm gonna speak how I speak, and that's, yeah. So like I said, God's like, yo, you see, God's like, yo. So God's like, I told you this guy would say no, and look, he's saying no. So I don't know, personally I found that unfair. It's like, how are you gonna, as like the God of all gods, like the power. Oh, and it was interesting the way this whole saga like is described in the Bible, because like I said, God is viewed as the God of all gods. I'm the one, I'm the only one. In fact, he calls himself, like, Moses asks him, like, who are you? Like, because he speaks to him through a burning bush, and he's like, I am who I am. And yet again, if it was me or one of my friends, hands in the air, shaking our head, like, what kind of an answer is that, bruh? But God is the only God. But in the story, it seems that he is in conflict with the Egyptians and their gods, who he sees as false gods, or maybe lesser gods, which is interesting, at least to me, because would that not play into the way people who read the Bible and take it as literal, or take it as the word, like the truth of life, of everything? So somebody with that much faith who looks at God, and guys, this is just my interpretation, and not even a fully formed interpretation, it's just me thinking out loud, but would not somebody looking at God, seeing, or looking down perhaps at other religions, or the religions of the gods of the Egyptians, cause his people to do the same? And maybe that's not his intention, but it can be argued that that's what's taking place in the world. Interesting. Anyway, so yeah, I found that just slightly interesting. And then, cool. So I got to the eighth plague, which was, he covers Egypt with the darkness that can be felt. And then, was that the ninth plague? I probably missed a plague, but it is what it is. So the tenth plague, the final plague, is that he kills all firstborn males in Egypt. But before the plague, he warns Moses to warn the Israelites that they should sacrifice a lamb and mark their homes with the blood of the lamb, as a sign, like, yo, we are Israelites, please, we are not, you know what I mean? So God could only smite the firstborn son of the Egyptians, which is hectic. But if you think about it, it's kind of like that consistent view. Like, fair enough, the average Egyptian is unlikely to have slaves. However, you benefit from a system that oppresses another group of people in silence. And therefore, you're as complicit to this system and to this oppression. And therefore, the punishment of those in power, you should not escape that punishment. So that's one school of argument, and I kind of look at that and kind of agree. Like, both in those days and this, I don't know if the degree of punishment would be the same. Like, maybe, like, being complicit may not be as, you may not be as guilty as somebody who is actually partaking, but maybe in your complicity you are partaking. So I think God just made a executive call and was like, "All right, all of you," and that's what happened. So after this is when Moses, or what's his name, Pharaoh, decides, okay, cool, I'm gonna let it slide. Like, I can't do this anymore. You guys can go. Then Moses gathers the people, and they're out, they're leaving. And when they're leaving, Pharaoh chases them down, like, changes his mind, or I don't know, maybe something clicks. He's like, yo, I'm coming after them. And when this happens, like, God tells, so they're walking towards the sea to find the promised land of Canaan, or a land within Canaan, and that is described as the promised land, where they will have a land of their own promised to them by God. But now the people are kind of getting restless, and they're like, yo, like, what's going on here? It's like, nah, you wildin'. Like, so by the way, I forgot to mention, so Moses comes in contact with his original family, and his brother Aaron plays a role in all of this. So his brother is like probably what you can view as the leader of the Israelites, other than obviously Moses, but like Moses is God sent leader, but Aaron may be considered the natural leader of the Israelites, you know what I mean? Like, maybe spokesperson, kind of that kind of figure. And he's like the person, like, always like dissenting, like, yo, this is what's happening, you know, like, this is how we feel, and this, like, God said this, but this is happening. And you know, he's that guy, don't be that guy. But anyway, so get to the sea, and God tells Moses to part the sea, and he parts the sea, and they escape through the sea. And then once the final Israelites are out of the sea, the parted sea, the canal, if you can think of it, or like walkway, God unparts the sea. And by this time, the Egyptian army is like coming into this pathway, and they're all killed. Cool. So you can consider this like the end of the first part of the, what's his name, of Exodus. So it's like part, and how I look at it, because Exodus is a 40 chapter book, and you can consider, and I think I learned this kind of view from Bible study, but the first half is like the up until the escape, and like God meeting the Israelites, more so through Moses at all times, and meeting Moses on Mount Sinai. Sinai, I want to describe it. And Mount Sinai is what I wanted to discuss a little bit earlier, because it's really, there is a Mount Sinai. Like, I checked this because I was thinking to myself, that name is fucking familiar. Mount Sinai. And I might be pronouncing this wrong, but that's where Moses met God and was given the Ten Commandments, and also made God basically broke down his laws, like, yo, this is how you guys will live as my people. And like he provides Moses with the deal, if you want to call it, the covenant that he was to make with the Israelites, being is that you guys will be my people in exchange for that, I will protect you, I will guide you, I'll be there for you. However, I expect certain things of you. So the Ten Commandments are like the easiest example of these things, but obviously there's a lot that goes into this covenant that they make with God. And I think there was a point in my upbringing that this is where I probably pulled away, because I was like, yo, there's something called a confirmation, and it's basically you graduate from being like a child and like somebody learning about what it about the religion, what it entails to be part of this religion, and what it entails to be a member of your church. And you can call it, for many different reasons, probably a lack of I think the simplest one would be that I didn't want to make the commitment to something that I had probably at that point already begun to have serious questions about. And I felt it was a, like, because you're raised in this belief, I was raised in this belief where this is all real, and worse off, I saw it like as literally the key to heaven. Without this, I don't go to heaven. But now, like, I'm having all of these doubts and all of these, like, yo, does this make sense? And, you know, like, and I'm never getting direct answers. And this may be due to my church and how things are, you know what I mean? And then again, who's going to give me direct answers about this kind of stuff? These are questions that, in my view, are only answered through death. You'll find the answers then. Other than that, you can't really expect anybody to have real answers about these stuff. Maybe in our lifetimes, they'll answer some of the stuff, but I can't. But in any case, I didn't think that it would be a good move for me to confirm as a member of my church. And that was probably the beginning of the descent into what you can call descent. I wouldn't call it descent, but probably the beginning of my road to being an agnostic person. Somebody who believes in a higher power, somebody who believes in divine purpose, but somebody who just does not, you know what that looks like. But anyway, so the Israelites, they were very different to me. They were like, first off, if you believe what's happening in the story, they've seen gang proof that God actually exists and that he's got their back and that they are his people. And they don't have any reason to doubt him. Or maybe they do, but, you know, like, there's way more reason to see all of this, to be told, to be saved by this God of all gods, who tells you that you are his people, he will be there for you, and all he requires is for you to follow his law. And maybe not all he requires, but what he requires is that you follow his law, including the Ten Commandments, which I'll just go over in a second. But yeah, that's what you do. And given all the proof that they have, you know, physically, whatever you want to see it, visually, they go into the covenant with God. Now, just go over the Ten Commandments real quick, and I thought it would be interesting to see which ones I perhaps would not have committed. So, you shall have no other gods before me. I think definitely because of the fact that where I sit right now in my belief, I wouldn't say I have any gods. So I think that kind of counts. And I've also looked at other religions as like borrowed things from other religions and learned from other religions. So that would be following the tenets or the principles of other religions. So yeah, I think number one, I'm out. You shall not make idols. I've definitely had, I haven't made like a shrine or anything like that, but I've definitely had people that I've looked at in a way that they've shaped my view on things, that I've modeled how I behave towards certain behaviors of people that I look up to or believe have achieved something that I want to emulate. So yeah, I think to be fair to myself, or to be fair in this kind of analysis, yeah, two out. So that's I'm two for two in terms of commandments broken. You shall not take the Lord's name in vain. Okay, I'm three for three, definitely. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. I've definitely worked on the fourth and on Sunday. This is the fourth commandment. Definitely worked on Sunday. Definitely not being holy on a Sunday, or treated the Sabbath as a holy day. So that's 4 out of 4. Five, honor your father and mother. I'd love to say that I've always done so. Maybe in the strictest manner I have. Not even in the strictest manner. I do not believe that at all times I've always honored my mother and father. And I'm not like proud of that at all. Trust me. At all. Like, I wish I had always done so. As a older, I wouldn't even say older, maybe more mature version of myself, and just somebody who values far more than perhaps I did in the past. The role my parents have played in my life, and just I definitely do at this point. But 5 for 5, reason to be fair. 6, you shall not murder. Well, if we're not talking about animals, then yeah. And when I say animals, before anyone goes crazy, it's part of my culture. And like literally last weekend, I slaughtered a goat, or we slaughtered a goat. But yeah, this happens maybe 2-3 times a year. So if we're not talking animals, then I've never murdered anybody yet. No, I'm kidding. Never murdered anybody. So I'm gonna go with 5 for 6. So that's the first one I have not. I don't know if they go up in how bad they are or whatever, but yeah, 5 for 6, definitely haven't done that. You shall not commit adultery. Now this one was very controversial. I remember on a Bible study camp that I went on, and it was actually staged at Heronbridge. I think I was in grade 4 or 5, somewhere around there, maybe even grade 3. But went on this camp for the weekend, and we were discussing the commandments. I can't remember how they came up, but adultery came up, and I think we were breaking it down. And adultery was even like looking at somebody's, or looking at any person, I want to say female, but person, in a lustful manner. And that person, let's call it, is not your wife, or not anybody. Yeah, not your wife. Then, yeah, that's adultery. That's even adultery. But, or even having sex out of wedlock, I think, is considered adultery. But if we're even looking at it as the word cheating as adultery, like how we look at it in today's terms, let's just go with 6 out of 7. Yet again, not proud of myself at all. For any one of those, like one of my biggest things currently, and I don't know, it's something that like I don't like about myself, but and I don't know how it fixes itself. I think I'm slowly fixing it, like just through behavior. But you know that thing of like undressing people who you see, like it's not right. It's not cool. Like it's not cool to be looking at like a woman who, like, and this is the thing, it happens, it still happens to this day, but I'm conscious of it, and I think that like it, I just know how uncool it is, so I try not to do it. But when you see someone attractive and you start like imagining, like daydreaming, or like, you know, like undressing them. And it's like, yo, dude, this person is like literally just minding their own business, doing their own thing. And here you are sexualizing them. Like, bro, this person could be like in the grocery store, like leaning over and grabbing like an apple. And here I am just imagining like the most like vulgar things. And it's just like unreasonable. It's not necessary. It's not fair. So yeah, adultery, I'm going to fairly take it as something that I have done. So that's 6 out of 7. 8 out of 7. No, 7 out of 7. I haven't done you shall not murder. So yeah, 7 out of 7. No, 6 out of 7. 8, you shall not steal. 7 out of 8. That's definitely happened in my life. I've definitely stolen stuff. Shit. Yeah. Yeah. Not proud of it yet again. But yeah, not who I am today. 9, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. So this is basically tell fibs about people. I'll say that's definitely happened as well. I think like how it's standardly known is you shall not bear false witness, you shall not lie. But even if you shall not bear false witness against your neighbors, so tell, like, you know what I mean? You shall not lie about people. You shall not lie. You shall not lie. I've lied. Like, it's happened. You know what I mean? I try my best not to lie, and I think I succeed more often than not these days. Like, especially because I think you guys have seen, even on the podcast, like, if I catch myself saying something that's untrue, I'll actually correct myself. What's the word? Moderate or, yeah, self-moderate or whatever. Like, as soon as I hear it and, like, I think about it for a second, even if it wasn't intentional, the fact that it doesn't ring true as I'm continuing my conversation, I'll go back and correct that. I think I've done that while going over these commandments. So, yeah, I think I can proudly say that it's not something... A lot of these things, like I said, it's not the person I am today, but if I'm being fair to myself, I've fallen short of these. Except for murder. I mean, if we're not talking animals. 10, you shall not covet. So covet is kind of how I see it, is like, shall not be envious, you shall not want what somebody else has, you shall not, like, you know, you shall not be that guy, like, just, and sorry to say it, but I have been covetous, and this is probably the one that's most prevalent to today, and I try not to, but I think it's part of my nature, part of human nature, and part of the world we live in terms of social media and that kind of stuff, that, you see a lot of stuff that you're supposed to want. And that's the thing. Maybe I'm being unfair to myself, because it's kind of like we're programmed to want things that maybe we don't actually want, but they are symbols of status, and they're symbols of achievement, and they're symbols of maybe winning. And we want to win. We want to be happy. And these, they were programmed in a way with marketing and all of this kind of stuff, that these are the things that will make you happy. And if you have these things, then you will either be successful or happy. And are these things synonymous? We don't know. Nobody knows. And like, we're all just seeing things, and people are posting their highlights, and all of a sudden, like, you feel like your life doesn't match that, and therefore you shouldn't be happy, or therefore you aren't happy, or therefore that's the reason you're not happy. And therefore you're covetous, or you feel like this person maybe doesn't deserve these things, or maybe you deserve them more, maybe, you know what I mean? And that's when it becomes, to me, dangerous and probably evil. Maybe not evil, but just very, very close to evil. And that's like the darker side of like the world we live in currently. And not to say that that's a constant theme in my life, but it does play a part of me living. And I try my best to like face that head on whenever I feel covetous, or whenever I feel envious. Why do I feel like, I always look at it like, why do I feel like this person doesn't deserve these things? Why do I look at how this person has achieved or done whatever in a negative manner? And I quickly, if I even look at things like that, which it does happen, I won't say it the majority of times, but it does happen, I just rationally work my way to the point where I understand that they do deserve those things. At worst, it's not even my place to look at whether they deserve them or not. My place is to look at what my life entails, what is in my control, and If I really want those things, then how can I achieve them for myself? Making sure that that's actually what I want, because otherwise I could be spending time to match somebody else's life that with things that don't actually matter to me. But anyway, so the ones that I didn't tick was murder. So out of 10 commandments, I've committed 9. And the reason why I was saying this is because when Moses came down from Mount Sinai, he immediately saw that after the Israelites had agreed that they're gonna follow God's rules and whatever, they immediately like went back on that and like didn't follow them, and like God is about to banish them and like just be vengeful and smite and do all of these things. And Moses like intervened, and then God and Moses struck up a friendship, which is exactly how it's described in the Bible. And yeah, man, I think one of the main things that I can see playing a role here, that's played a role in my life, that's played a role especially towards the second part of the story, so that being after the plagues and after they've escaped and now it's time to establish a new rule of law and like a new way of living and that kind of stuff. And I think that definitely plays a role in my life, or at least it's played a role, like how I look at how I have broken a lot of these commandments, and I do see the value in some of these commandments, even the ones that are broken. And I now see, now like as a mature adult, what breaking them did to me. Like I think in the last podcast I spoke about shame and that kind of stuff, and some of these themes are relevant to that conversation as well, in terms of lying, in terms of stealing, in terms of being covetous, in terms of adultery, these kinds of themes, and acts. Let me not say themes like they hypothetical, these are acts that I've committed. And like whilst committing them, I maybe didn't feel as shameful as I do now, which is interesting, because the person I am today will not commit these acts, but you know, shit happens. But like that's how I feel, but still feel so much shame over committing them. And I feel like God was there to be like, yo, it's not gonna happen. Like, yo, you guys, I told you, you guys promised that you wouldn't do this, you did it, fuck you guys. And Moses was like, no, like, give them another chance, give us another chance. And he did, God did. And we'll see as the Bible goes on, in a year's time, whether they were deserving, or we as humanity were deserving, well, not humanity, yeah, were we deserving of that second chance, or, you know, are we deserving? I will always lie on the side of yes, we are deserving. People can end up being, people are redeemable, but that goes on their behalf. The onus falls on people to show you their redeemability, and it doesn't fall on you to just redeem people who are not showing any sense of growth. And yeah, man, I think I'm gonna cut this conversation over there, because I really enjoyed that, to be honest. I think this is definitely gonna be a theme or a tradition that I'm gonna enjoy a lot of. It lends itself to what this podcast is about, which is introspection. And next part of the podcast is my favorite part of the podcast, and you guys know what that is by this point. It's 52 episodes, god damn it. But that part of the podcast is the musical project of the week, and I gotta tell you honestly, guys, this musical project of the week may be my favorite project of the year, and I've only heard it since this week. I only found it this week. I found it by chance, like by chance, and I'm like, you know, one of those moments where you're just lucky to find something, and when you do find it, it changes, or maybe not it changes everything, but I am now going down a new rabbit hole of music discovered through one album that is just, so this album was released like 19 years ago, it was released in 2002, by this dude who the album, like in the album, he's called Aquanote. But in actuality, he is like, his name is Gabriel. I'm gonna tell you now. Gabriel Rene. So he's like a expressive songwriter, studio hand, son of a West Coast jazzman. He formed Solstice with Andy Cole, and I've just been going down a rabbit hole in his music as well. They were like a DJ, like group band kind of thing, blending house, like jazz, like just like soulful music, funky music, you know. So this project, like the project's name is The Pearl, and like how I take it, like as I said, so first off, like I said, this guy created this alter ego or whatever you can call it as a solo project, so Aquanaut. And in this project, he's like, it's his solo project, but he's got features of like people singing. I think it's something like 7 different female singers on the project. So how I took the project, how I listened to it, is like the vocal performances were incredible. I enjoyed them. Maybe you, as like vocal people or whatever, may not enjoy them as much. I enjoyed them, and I enjoyed how they complemented the music, or let me rather say the instrumentation, the production. And when I say that, I honestly, like, that to me was like the highlight of the album, especially thinking back that this album came out in 2002. I really loved the music, if you want to, like, so, yeah, I loved it so much. And then, like, it had a running theme of, like, as most house does, like, love and, like lust and, like, loss of love and gain of love. And but The Pearl is pretty simple. You can simplify. And it's The Pearl, and the album is broken down into, like, maybe 3 or 4 parts, where before each of the parts, there's a water song. And it falls into the idea of like what we were just discussing between the Bibles or whatever. I can't wait to get to Psalms. But anyway, water song. And the album is called The Pearl. And it's all about love and like lust and that kind of stuff. So you can imagine, The Pearl is, you know, and the water song is like water song 1, water song 2, water song 3. And you can imagine that these water psalms, The Pearl, you know where I'm going with this. Yeah, figure it out. Listen to the album and figure it out. But anyway, really incredible album. I really love this album. Guys, like, I highly recommend that you listen to this album. I will, like, beginning of next year, like I did last year, I released my album of the year. Last year it was come on, man. It was by Linty Leonardo, and I just can't remember the album name, but I think it's something, A Class of My Own. There we go. Incredible album. And this might be up as album of the year for me. But let me live with it for a little bit more. But so far, so good, man. And yeah, guys, we have come to the end of the podcast. If you are still listening, I really fuck with you. Please, like, share this podcast. Push it everywhere you can. Like, comment. Just give me more interactions, just so I know what I'm doing awesome, what I could do better, what you enjoyed about the podcast. Just everything that you can, just give it to me. But until the next time, I bid you adieu, and I will see you soon.